All right, welcome back to your favorite sports podcast, Third String Podcast. I'm here, joined as always by Pete LeCleed. Pete, I am sorely depressed because we predicted these NFL games. I went 0 for 4 in my predictions. I'm really bummed about that. I really put up a strong third string performance, if you will. It was worse than Josh McCown coming off the bench.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I didn't think Josh McCown did that bad.
I mean, he wasn't terrible, but he also couldn't score in the red zone. And so the point where Carson Wentz has just been unbelievable this year is in the red zone and scoring. The Eagles have one of the most efficient offenses in the red zone, statistically speaking, this year. And they could not drive it in once via a touchdown. So that was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, what a way to end the season. What a way to end Wild Card Weekend. That dude played his guts out, though. You got to admit, just watch Josh McCown and watching that postgame interview, you feel for that guy. I mean, a journeyman, obviously he was never up for an NFL award of any sort, but he's been on some bad teams, and it was fun to see him get a chance. I know it wasn't as much fun for you to see him get a chance, but watching him grit it out, it kind of made you feel for the guy. So,
well, you know, it was pretty crazy. It felt like deja vu, right? Because of course in the 2017-18 season, we had the Nick Foles miracle story. And here was Carson Wentz again going down due to a hit from Jadeveon Clowney that we can talk about. And here comes in the veteran quarterback who, you know, I mean, it's not quite the same as Foles. I think Foles has a little more upside than McCown, but McCown's just been a journeyman, like you said, just bounce around from team to team. Never, ever been in the playoffs before. And so this was his first playoff performance. He did serviceably well. He moved a lot more than I thought he would. He looked pretty peppy there for a 40-year-old behind the line.
He took some brutal hits.
He did.
He took some brutal hits.
And maybe now is the time to talk about brutal hits and Jadeveon Clowney. So as an impartial, unbiased observer, do you think that Jadeveon Clowney hit on Wentz was dirty?
I don't think it was a dirty hit. I think it was absolutely a hit that should have been penalized. If you watch the way Jadeveon Clowney is diving at Carson Wentz as he's falling forward as a runner, it didn't look to me like he intentionally went for the head, but he did make helmet-to-helmet contact, leading with the crown of his helmet, launching himself. By the letter of the law, that should have been a penalty and should have been a 15-yarder. I'm not sure it was a dirty hit. I don't really know of Jadeveon Clowney as a dirty player. I know of him as being a tough player. I mean, you think about that hit in the Outback Bowl back in, what was that, January 2013. I mean, he's been part of some big plays, so he brings it. I'm just not willing to say that was a dirty hit, but it absolutely should have been a 15-yard penalty, evaluated for targeting and figured out something to do with it other than just determining that Carson Wentz was a runner. So we're just going to move on and watch what turned out to, I think, be a pretty serious injury. I haven't actually heard today what the final diagnosis is on him, but it seemed like that was a pretty serious blow to the head. And I think it was Chris Collinsworth made the great point that not only was it the hit to the back of his head, but then it was his head slamming to the turf. So he basically had two opportunities for a concussion right there, just based on the way that he was diving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is, I've heard that's one of the worst things that can happen is basically you get hit from the back and then your head slams into the front, because what happens is basically your brain sloshes around inside your cranium back and forth. And so you get, like, you know, potentially multiple concussions in the front and the back. So it's pretty awful. It's a horrible way to go down. It's just, it's a bummer to see Carson go down like this. I mean, when I look at the play, and I have a little video of this that I put up on my Twitter feed, and it generated a little bit of conversation from it. It seemed like the general consensus among people at the time was that it was a dirty play. Now, of course, there are the, like, pro Seahawks apologists who are just like, no, this is just football. Get used to it. But what I see is, I mean, there's a couple things. You alluded, you know, the quarterback as a runner. This is basically the pocket collapses and Carson has nowhere to go. Yep. So he's just kind of trying to dive forward, right? Tuck it and dive forward to not lose a ton of yardage. On similar plays, at least one similar play that I can remember from the season, he did that. And was actually more of a runner, was trying to score a touchdown, and they ruled that he was giving himself up prior to the goal line, and so he didn't score a touchdown because he had, quote, given himself up. There's no rule there. They just treat him as a runner. And so Jadeveon Clowney is going in, even though Carson's clearly going to the ground, and yet he still lowers his head into Carson's, into the back of Carson's helmet. And so to me, it looks like a dirty play. Now, I mean, I'm not saying that, like, this makes Clowney a bad guy. I think so many of these things are bang bang decisions, and it's almost instinctive. And Jadeveon Clowney certainly has a tendency to hit really hard. So I'm not, you know, incensed here. I mean, there was one person who responded to me and said that, that, you know, they hoped that Russell Wilson got concussed and tossed out of the game to make it even. And I was like, I'm not saying that we should, you know, go inflict the same punishment. All I'm saying is that this is not a play that I'd like to see on the football field.
And it's the exact plays that we've been trying to get out of both the NFL and college for 5 or 6 years at this point.
Yeah.
That was a textbook example of something that needs to be penalized.
Yeah, totally. This is, by the way, the small ball segment. So this is where we're going to talk about just a few things that we noticed here and there across the sports interwebs and various games of the week. So, yeah, Pete, it's always tough watching your team go down. That's what happened to my Eagles yesterday. You didn't have a chance to watch your Redskins go down because they eliminated themselves pretty early on in the season.
But we saw them get to this point.
but there was still some Redskins news. How do you feel about the Ron Rivera signing? I mean, I think we talked about it a little bit last week too, but the news is official, of course, since we last discussed. How do you feel?
I love it. Actually, this is the most excited I've been about this team in quite some time. Like we talked about, I don't think at this point Ron Rivera or the Redskins organization is capable of a Super Bowl here in the next 2 to 3 years. They gave him a 5-year contract, which seems to be a bit much, to be honest. But he's bringing a lot of his guys in, and what Ron Rivera is known for is being a player's guy, building a culture. And at this point, I just want the Redskins to stop being so dysfunctional. Honestly, I'm okay with not competing for a Super Bowl here for a few years if we're not the laughing stock of the league. And so I think Ron Rivera is the guy to bring some respectability back to a very proud franchise. I mean, in the 90s, they were everything. The late 80s, they were everything. And since the early 2000s, they've been a laughing stock for so long. He's bringing some of his advanced analytical guys from Carolina. He's really getting the band back together from Carolina, which I'm not as excited about in terms of some of the people he's bringing in. It seems like he's bringing the guys he knows, which I understand. But you look at some of the problems Carolina had in those last few years. It's going to be interesting with a guy like Dwayne Haskins, where I think you could argue a lot of his skill sets are similar to what we had with Cam Newton 4 to 5 years ago before that rash of injuries. So it's really going to be interesting to see if the Ron Rivera club can figure out a way to harness that energy. So I'm excited. I was worried when we talked last Sunday that Bruce Allen would still be around, that Dan Snyder would kind of keep his cronies in there. And I think Dan Snyder made the smart football decision for the first time in a long time. So I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty excited. But the coaching carousel in the NFL is going to be interesting.
Offseason. Well, we definitely need to talk about the Cowboys next in small ball. But just on this Ron Rivera point, I think you should be excited as well. I see the Redskins and the Browns in very similar situations in that what those organizations both need is nothing more than an adult or two in the room, right?
Yeah.
Like, so in the Redskins case, you have Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen just running a complete clown show. In the Browns case, you have, you know, someone like the Haslam family firing or hiring Kitchens and thinking that he's the guy to coach them to victory. That obviously just failed miserably. And the Haslam's track record of hiring coaches is the worst in professional sports.
Really bad.
Period. Really bad. And what both of those organizations need is just somebody who can come in. I mean, like, I think for this reason, Mike McCarthy would have been a good choice for the Browns. They need someone who has successfully steered a franchise before as a coach and maybe, you know, from the personnel standpoint as well. In the Redskins case, I think the Browns have a fine GM, but the Redskins need a good GM. So someone who's successfully steered a franchise in the past. They don't need to be like a revolutionary, you know, they don't need to be Bill Belichick, right? But they need to have successfully shown that they can generate consistent playoff success, that they can have, you know, a relatively scandal-free organization, that they have players who want to play for them. I mean, you probably saw the quote that Greg Olson gave when Ron Rivera was fired. It was something like, "This is the worst day he's ever been a part of in the NFL," or something like that. I mean, his players love playing for him.
They were upset.
And when your franchise is in the gutter and really needs to rebuild, you need someone who can come in there with that track record, motivate his players, and lead them to success, even if you're not thinking that he's going to win you a Super Bowl in 2 or 3 years. Least get you in the conversation where you won't be, like you said, the laughing stock of the NFL. And I think the Rivera hiring is great. I think McCarthy would have been good for the Browns as well for the same reason, just someone who gives you stability and maturity, et cetera. For the Cowboys, I mean, as an NFC East guy, how do you feel about the Cowboys hiring McCarthy? I personally love this because I am not scared by the prospect of facing McCarthy for the next 5 years. or 10 if Jerry Jones does with McCarthy what he did with Garrett.
Yeah, the love affair between Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones was, it was so interesting and so compelling in the weirdest of ways. I mean, Jason Garrett had been there since 2011 when he was the interim coach and then brought on full time after Wade Phillips got fired.
I mean, I think Jerry Jones is just, he's just a weird guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I don't know much about him personally, but he seems to really have a great relationship with his kids. Like, I'm sure, I shouldn't say I'm sure.
Yeah, they're all running that franchise.
Yeah, I mean, they are. And I don't doubt that Jerry Jones is like an upright and honest man. But he's just kind of weird. He doesn't run he doesn't run his franchise like anybody else in the NFL. He doesn't make personnel decisions the same way. He, you know, insists on being his own GM when he is really not qualified to do that. And it's interesting. It's interesting to watch.
Well, and I think you look at the way that they separated with Jason Garrett, where, I mean, the reports were, at this point, it's been years where they've talked about Jason Garrett is going to get run out of Dallas. And the fact that they, quote unquote, respected Jason and loved Jason so much that they didn't want to fire him. And they wanted to make sure that he had a soft landing somewhere. I mean, that's why that franchise is still dysfunctional. Like, in sports, you have to eliminate the personal, we like this guy too much to fire him. We like this guy too much to not let him start. Like, you can't put the needs of an individual and relationships above winning. And I'm not saying that you need to win at all costs and sacrifice a lot, but these organizations, much like my Redskins and Bruce Allen, who can't sever the ties when things are going poorly, that's where these organizations get stuck in a rut and can never progress. So the hiring of Mike McCarthy, I think, is really, really interesting, really for two reasons. The first is, this is going to get me in trouble with some people, I think Dak Prescott's skill set is similar to where Aaron Rodgers was 2 to 3 years ago, where we see a guy who has decent mobility, good arm strength, not great accuracy, but that dynamic ability to make something happen. And we saw that Mike McCarthy was good at scheming for Aaron Rodgers here for a few years, and it got stale in Green Bay. So I think that's going to be interesting, that he's got a quarterback in a pretty similar situation. And how can he do that in an NFC East that, aside from the Eagles and the Cowboys, has not been competitive for a long time? So I think the untapped market of the NFC East outside of Philadelphia was a prime spot for him to land. But number two, you look at the way Mike McCarthy ran things in Green Bay. That organization is historically not willing to pay free agents tons and tons of money in Green Bay. They kind of like being on their island up there in Wisconsin. They like their loyal foot soldiers. They like guys who are not going to rock the boat and not be divas. And who does that sound like to you? That sounds like Jason Garrett. That sounds like a loyal foot soldier who lets Jerry Jones run personnel however he needs to, that he can let Jerry Jones be the loud voice in the room in press conferences and storming out of the locker room after a loss or celebrating in the locker room after a win. Mike McCarthy isn't going to make it about him. And so I think when you bring in a guy who has proven that he can win, I mean, Mike McCarthy's held up the Lombardi Trophy.
Yeah, like, it's true.
In the past decade, you can bring that experience and that respect while also still not getting the divas that we're seeing with NFL coaches and college coaches especially, but not getting the diva treatment. I think it was a match made in heaven for Dallas. I don't know what the success is going to be on the field. I'm hoping it's not good just as an NFC East loyalist, but at the same time, I think if you're Jerry Jones, this is perfect for you.
Yeah, well, now with the hiring of McCarthy, we've got three of the four coaching positions full in the NFC East. And it also means that Ron Rivera, who's been in the job for a week, maybe less, I think less, right? Is now the second longest tenured coach in the NFC East behind, of course, Doug Peterson. The Giants are doing their interviews. They're interviewing Josh McDaniels, by the way. I saw that today, but they're doing their interviews. I expect that they'll have their selection in the next couple of weeks, but that will round out the NFC East. But obviously something had to go here, Pete, because the NFC East was historically bad this year. Yeah. The Eagles barely won it. Now, of course, they had a bunch of injuries and all of that, and they won it in sort of heroic last minute fashion against the Cowboys, but it was really, really bad. I mean, a losing record by far against all of the divisions, etc. So I'm excited at least to see the NFC East be more competitive and be interesting in the future. Hopefully McCarthy doesn't have too much success in Dallas for our sakes and the sakes of our teams. This Jason Garrett thing is just so bizarre though. I don't know if he'll have a job. I doubt he'll have a job after this, but it's just a job as a coach. That is, it's just so strange to see what has happened here and just how long it took them to actually fire him. On the 5th yesterday, Ian Rappaport tweeted out that the Cowboys have officially fired coach Jason Garrett, and Garrett has allowed them to do so because there were other reports that Garrett was like still coming to work and, you know, not wanting to leave the building. And it's just completely ridiculous. It's such a drama. I mean, yeah. Leave the Cowboys. You know, the Cowboys have all the resources to be one of the best run organizations in the NFL, like the Patriots. And instead they managed to rival the Browns with like just incompetence of everything. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I wonder, with an organization like the Cowboys, I really thought that they were going to try to make the splashiest hire they could. In all seriousness, I was expecting them to make a run for Tony Romo and try to outbid CBS to pull him off the analytical and at least put him on a staff somewhere, because you and I have talked about it. I think Tony Romo right now is second only to Troy Aikman in color commentary in football. That is both college.
I think he's better than
professional. They're great. And boy, watching the way Tony Romo was dissecting the last 5 minutes of the Titans Patriots game with the 5 minute rule, with the false starts and teeing up the rules analyst, like, This sounds super cheesy, but Tony Romo is just a joy to listen to. Like, it is really, really good. So I expected the Cowboys to do something like that and pull a flashy name who would be exciting, dominate a press conference. And then when they hired Mike McCarthy today, it made perfect sense to me as I was driving home from work thinking about it, that he's going to be a loyal soldier.
Yeah.
And he's going to make him competitive.
It makes me wonder though, too. I mean, maybe Jerry Jones texted Tony, you know, and was like, hey, are you interested in interviewing for this? And maybe Tony was like, honestly, Jerry, thanks for the offer. I love my job now. I get to go golfing on these pro-am tournaments all the time. I gallivant around. I make a ton of money for CBS, like get to spend time with my kids. That's stuff that you can't do if you're an NFL coach. You know, that's head down, nose to the grindstone. Yeah. So, you know, who knows? I mean, if I were Tony, I think I would just enjoy my gig the way it is now.
Agreed.
Being an NFL coach, I think, would be really stressful. But that's all I've got on small ball piece. Should we move on to Take Shop?
Let's go. Let me hear it this week, my friend.
All right. Well, you and I are going to share our Take Shop topic, of course, as we discussed, because you and I both have the same take that I don't think is a super controversial take necessarily. And yet at the same time, I don't understand why this hasn't already come to fruition. NFL overtime rules are a complete abomination. One of the worst things about watching an NFL game is the possibility that it'll go to overtime and will be decided by one of the teams scoring a touchdown without the other team even being able to touch the football offensively. That's my take. So again, not too controversial, but what's your instant reaction? And then I have a little clip that I want to play and we'll talk about it.
I totally agree. I mean, And maybe it's like the pass interference rules where it robbed a big team in a big spot for the second year in a row that we need to talk about this. But you look at last year with the Chiefs, with Pat Mahomes not getting on the field. This year, Drew Brees doesn't get his chance to counter. I'm not saying that they need to go to college overtime. I love college overtime, but at the same time, that shortened field with those larger boys who play the game so much better, I understand it. But the fact, I mean, think about it. In baseball, would we allow a dude to hit a home run in the top of the 10th and not have the home team counter in the bottom of the 10th? I mean, it's ridiculous. No other sport plays a sudden death where just by controlling the ball, the puck, whatever it's going to be, the other team never gets a chance. I mean, hockey plays sudden death in overtime, but there's a face-off. Both teams have a chance to compete. It doesn't make sense that it is determined by a coin toss. And obviously there's a lot more factors, but at the end of the day, the coin toss is one of the biggest indicators of who's going to win overtime. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I completely agree. Here's a proposal from Pat McAfee, the former Colts punter. I know you're a big Colts fan, but he's got an idea for how to fix the overtime problem. So let's listen to this.
Here is how you fix overtime. You play one extra 10-minute quarter, classic football, Bart Scott. Okay, both teams get the ball. You punt if you have to. Blocking, tackling, throwing, running, you get it. Classic football. If tied at end of said quarter, that quarter I just explained, two-point conversion, sudden death shootout style. One offense is on one side, the offense is on the other side. They go back and forth three times. If one team scores, the other team doesn't, it's over. Score, score, you move on. If it's tied after three of those, then you know what you do. You go to a kicker duel, just like Alexander Hamilton did back in the day.
All right, so I love the idea of the kicker duel. So to summarize, this is what Pat McAfee thinks we should do. There's one 10-minute quarter of classic football. If you're tied at the end of that quarter, then you do a two-point conversion, sudden death shootout. If you successfully do three of those, each team, three two-point shootouts, then at the end of that shootout, then you have a kicker duel to the death. And that duel would alternate from distance, right? So presumably, you know, you start at like a 20-yard and then 25, 30, 35, whatever the case is. But you have the kicker's duel for the victory. What do you think about this?
I like the idea of the shootout. I don't like the idea of a full 10-minute overtime. I think in today's game with so many injuries, I'm sure that they're playing TV time and advertising time. I like giving both teams the opportunity to score with similar field position and almost don't even make the clock an issue. That's one thing that I really like about college football with their overtime rules is I think the 25 is too close, but at the same time, I like that the clock is not an issue anymore, that all the rules are the same. The clock is not an issue anymore. So I say each team gets a drive, do what you can. If we're still tied after that, we start getting into crazy town and we go down the road that Pat talked about. I like all that stuff. I don't think we need a full 10-minute quarter anymore. That seems like that's going to be a lot of football to watch and consume. And I'm sure that a lot of these owners are trying to figure out how to maximize TV time. And is when you have a week 9 matchup that no one cares about, and it's the Redskins and the Dolphins at 3-3 playing a 6-point game. We don't want to see another 10 minutes of that. Like, let's just call it. So I don't know if the NFL needs to have different rules for the regular season versus overtime. Maybe that's an issue here. Cause in the postseason, we can play the TV game a little more than we can the regular season. I don't know what it is. All I know is the coin toss cannot determine this, and we need to level the playing field a heck of a lot better than we have it right now. I don't understand why the NFL owners voted this down after the Chiefs proposed it last year when Pat Mahomes had to stand on the sideline or when Matt Ryan had to stand on the sideline against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Like, these don't make sense anymore. It's bad for the sport. It's bad for viewership, and it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth that we truly didn't get to see both of these teams perform.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I really hate that you can have one team that scores a touchdown right off the bat and the other offense doesn't get a chance to touch the ball. It's horrible. I mean, you have Kirk Cousins. Look, I'm happy for him. He throws the game-winning touchdown to Kyle Rudolph in the corner of the end zone. Drew Brees, the all-time leader in passing yards and passing touchdowns, doesn't get a chance to touch the ball. Yeah. That illustrates to me right there the ridiculousness of these rules. My idea for proposed overtime, I like Pat McAfee's idea, but and I think it's better than the current system, but I, like you, don't like the 10-minute quarter. I mean, we're talking about lengthening the length of a game by 16 to 17%. And like you said, when we're talking about guys' bodies and injuries piling up and all that, that's not insignificant. 10 minutes of football time is a lot of time. What I would like to see is where instead of starting from the 25, like they do in college, you start from the 50. You start exactly in midfield. And so
I like that.
Yeah. And so there's no, you're not really close, right? It's not like a simple catch and run to get a touchdown. So you're pretty far away. You can't just kick a field goal from there. That's what they do in college a lot, right? When they don't make it, they just try to kick the field goal. So you can't do that from the 50. Yep. The other thing I would say, though, and this is the interesting wrinkle, no punts. So you're not allowed to punt. Mm. In other words, you have to go for it on every fourth down.
Pat McAfee wouldn't support this.
Right, no, exactly. He likes the punter. Understandably so.
For the brand.
Right. So no punts. That's what I would do. So you start from the 50, no punts. And that gives the defense, obviously, four downs to try to stop the offense from progressing. But then it wouldn't be a sudden death thing It would just be an alternating possession thing, I think. Like you'd have, you know, you'd get two possessions, right? And then see where you are after two possessions. And you maybe have that back and forth for like three total possessions for each team. And then you can go to a like 2-point conversion shootout style thing. That's it. That's what I would do. But I like the idea of taking out the punts. I always like watching four down football anyway. I think it's more exciting. And it's cool. And now maybe you could have something too, where have some ridiculous rule. Like, you know, it's four down football, but the first down is the 25-yard line. Like, you know, how when you play backyard football, you know, it's like, okay, the first downs are like quarter feet. Yeah, exactly. Do completions. Or it's like, okay, midfield's the first down. And once you're past midfield, like the, you know, it's first and goal. Right. So, you could have something like that too, and make it a little more interesting. But, I think no punts would be fun. And starting from the 50, I think is pretty necessary too.
Every other sport has a unique way of dissecting overtime. And I keep going back to college because it's the closest equivalent we have here. Did you see what college football changed this year after the crazy LSU A&M game 2 years ago where they went to 7 overtimes? Now, excuse me, in the 5th overtime, you stop playing everything and you just go to straight 2-point conversions. And that is fascinating as well. You just have to do something to keep the game moving so it doesn't get stale, minimizing how many plays dudes have to be out there taking big hits, but still ensuring that it's competitive either way. That's what they have to figure out. And that's what's missing. I think these past two postseasons have been disastrous for the NFL in terms of pace of play, in terms of the competitive advantage that we're seeing some teams get. I mean, Pat Mahomes standing on the sideline, pass interference is being blown in the same end zone for the Saints 2 years in a row, even after they change all these rules. The NFL has a huge problem with officiating, like you and I have talked about so many times, and it just keeps rearing its ugly head. The owners have to figure something out here with the league office very, very soon. It is distracting at this point from the game. It is completely distracting.
Okay, here's another idea for overtime. So if you're tied at the end of regulation, you obviously go to overtime, and then each team gets to start from the opponent's 20 and try to score a touchdown. But you still only have four downs and there's no first down. In other words, it's just, you know, first and goal every time, every time you start, right? And second and goal and third and goal and fourth and goal. And then if both teams successfully score from there, then you back it up 20 more yards. And so you're at the 40 and it's first, it's first and goal. And so then, you know, theoretically you can back up all the way to the 80 or your own 0-yard line, your own goal line. And you have four downs to just cross the entire field. Super exciting to watch. TV. I would love it.
It'd be great TV.
It would. And like, you'd think that's ridiculous, but the possibility of a pick six and something like that is very real, right? So it'd be exciting.
Yeah, you're gonna have quarterbacks just slinging it as much as they can. It'll be fun.
I mean, who
wouldn't
want to watch that, right? That would be fun. I would love to watch, you know, 40 first and goal from the 40. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, and that's what I like about these new overtime rules in college, where we're at the 2, and the first time you see it, like, what's going on? We're not running a traditional offense. And you're like, this is exciting. It is one play.
Exactly.
And then you're sitting down. Like, it is moving. It's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, what I always think about with these NFL overtime rules, honestly, is you remember in 2011, Tim Tebow for the Broncos against the Steelers. Steelers were a powerhouse that year. A blown coverage in the secondary from the Broncos 20. Tim Tebow, who we can all agree was not truly built to be an NFL quarterback, wins a playoff game in Pittsburgh on one blown coverage. And get it, one play should absolutely be able to change a game. But again, the competitive advantage and just the ability to answer was lost.
Yeah.
So
you could also do some stuff and like get creative with personnel groupings. You could make rules that like you can only have three linemen, or you have to have three men in the backfield.
7-on-7.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'd be awesome to make it a 7-on-7 competition. It'd be fun.
That's what hockey does, and it totally changes the game where they eliminate one skater on each team and just how much open ice there is and how much more you see long passes, you see fast breaks. I really like that idea, actually.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, so 7-on-7 and do my 20, 40, 60, 80 idea. It'd be great.
You'd have some dudes who were gassed.
I know, but it'd be so fun to watch.
It'd be awesome.
All right, Roger Goodell, get on it. Okay.
Yeah, I hear he's really open to feedback.
All right. Should we go on to our pick'em segment?
Let's talk about this weekend. Hopefully do a little better than we did. Although I take a little bit of the blame for your 0-4. I was dogging on Carson Wentz.
I know.
So much. You changed your pick because of that.
You egged me into picking the Eagles. I know.
I got so far in your nugget on that one, my friend.
Well, so let's review what happened here. So across the whole weekend. So you and I split on the Bills Texans. I said Bills, you said Texans. I was feeling very vindicated through that entire game until Deshaun Watson just decided to put the team on his back and somehow do what he did in the final moments there.
Remember when you were dogging on my Deshaun Watson as a top five quarterback in the NFL?
I do remember that.
He must have heard that podcast.
He must have, yeah. He might have changed my mind on there. I still would say I would rather have Carson Wentz than Deshaun, but he's up there. I'll give you that for sure. Especially after that game. I mean, that game made me a Deshaun believer in a way that I have not been before. So that was amazing.
That was like Clemson Deshaun. That was something else that we haven't seen in his NFL career.
We'd also talked about Sean McDermott's coaching, and he just made some coaching decisions there that I didn't really understand. I mean, that 4th and 27 where Allen took the sack. I mean, it was ugly stuff. But anyway, so I was feeling good about my pick, you know, through the third quarter, and then Deshaun Watson vindicated you. And then the Titans Patriots, I mean, I think almost everyone picked the Patriots, right? Like, you just learned to not bet against Belichick. So I don't feel bad about that one. And
that was a tight game from start to finish. That one could have gone either way under five.
Exactly. And then Vikings Saints, same thing. I mean, that went to overtime. So, you know, definitionally that could have gone either way and almost did. So I don't feel bad about it. Don't feel too bad about that one either. And then, you goaded me into switching my switching my Seahawks Eagles pick. So I would have been a glorious 1-3.
My friend, know thy enemy.
But yeah, 0-4. So I'm going to try to do better this week, Pete. And the lines are up for all of these games. So let's go against the spread this time. And let's start with Minnesota Vikings at the Niners. They are playing on Saturday at 4:35 p.m. Who are you going with here? The line is Niners by 7.
I still really like the Niners. I think Niners by 7. Watching the way the Vikings won that game, if you can give me the first half Minnesota Vikings, this will be a great game. If you give me the second half Minnesota Vikings, I'm not too confident in the ability of that offense. It seemed like I still don't think the team chemistry is quite there. I was really glad to see Kirk Cousins get the vindication of having that great downfield pass. I still just really don't trust the Vikings offense as much as I would like to. I would argue the 49ers have struggled a little here down the stretch. Obviously they still had the seeding to demonstrate that they had a great year. I mean, they're still 13-3. But at the end of the day, those last couple games the 49ers were playing, it looked like they were running out of gas a little. So I think if the first half Vikings show up and can run a little with the 49ers, that'll be a closer game. But right now I'm feeling good about the 49ers minus 7.
Interesting. I think that people have been underestimating the Vikings, in part maybe because of the Kirk Cousins effect, but they went into the Dome in New Orleans against one of the most complete, if not the most complete rosters in the NFL, and held up, and more than held up, they beat them. So I like the Vikings' chances to at least win against the spread here. I do think the Niners are going to win this game. I mean, they're playing at home. They have a very complete roster themselves. Some incredible defensive playmakers on that team. Some really good offensive scheming from Kyle Shanahan. I do think the Niners will come away with a win, but I like this to be a little bit closer than 7 points. I'm going to go with the Vikings here plus 7. All right, next line, Titans at Ravens. The line here is Ravens minus 9. So what do you think about that?
You know, if I had looked at this matchup before the Titans-Patriots game, I would have felt pretty good about Baltimore minus 9 with just how dynamic Lamar Jackson has been. But you and I talked about it last week. Derrick Henry, and everyone got to see it on Saturday night, is such a game changer, not only in the explosive plays he makes, but just the grinded out running style he has. The Baltimore defense is good this year. Let's not take anything away from them. But I see Derrick Henry, if he can hold on to the ball, and I'm not talking about fumbles, obviously that's important, but if they can have some long, sustained drives, that is something we haven't seen a lot of opponents do against Baltimore this year, is have the long, sustained drives, keep the Baltimore offense on the sidelines. If they can do that, I like the Titans to keep this closer. I'm not sure that I would take the Titans straight up, but I definitely like them +9 right here.
Yeah, I definitely like the Ravens straight up if I were going money line. And I hear your point about Derrick Henry and the Titans. I mean, Tannehill's actually been unbelievable this year as well. It's just like a different guy than we had in Miami. I mean, it's amazing what a change of scenery can do in some cases. But I look at the Titans. I mean, they had the pick six at the end that made it 20 points, but that means they only scored 14 offensive points in the whole game. That's not incredible. That's not an amazing showing by any means. And Derrick Henry had amazing showing, but the rest of the team did not. I think the Ravens have a great defensive coordinator. I think that he will look at the tape from that game and figure out how to neutralize or continue to neutralize the Titans passing game. And then they'll have to just rely on Henry to try to take them to victory. But if we're saying that they're going to score 14 points, then to get to that, you know, -9, we're saying that Ravens will not score more than 23. And I think the Ravens will definitely score more than 23 in this game. I see this game being like a 30-14, 30-21 in a best case scenario, in which case that'd be a push on the money line. But I like the Ravens here at -9.
Do you think the Ravens defense is better than the Patriots defense this year?
I think right now at this point in the season, yes. I mean, the Patriots were amazing through the first 6-8 games. They really kind of tailed off. And so what we saw against the Titans this past weekend, what the Patriots put up, I would say is absolutely comparable to what the Ravens have been doing consistently throughout the season.
Okay, fair enough. I was giving the slight edge to the Patriots, and that's kind of what was affecting mine, is I think that they saw a better defense last week than they will see this week. But the explosive offense that they're going to have to deal with in Baltimore is night and day compared to what they saw with old Tom Brady 12 out there.
Oh, TB12. Yeah, we didn't even really talk about that. The dynasty may be dead, and I could not be happier, but we'll save that for another day. We can speculate about Tom Brady's future in a future episode. Okay, next one. Texans at Chiefs. Now, when these two teams met in the regular season, of course, the Texans beat the Chiefs, but now we have the Chiefs as the heavy favorite of the weekend, -9.5 over the Texans. What do you think about that? That seems a little high to me.
That's a big line, but I'm actually going to take the Chiefs on this one. I think Pat Mahomes he's not due for a breakout. He's been breaking out since the first day that he was starting in Kansas City. But I think Pat Mahomes is due for a big game here. The way that they exited the playoffs last year, the up and down season they had with his freak injury, actually the night that we recorded when I was out there in Colorado with you, excuse me. I think Pat Mahomes is going to do a lot of fun stuff on the national stage this week. And I'm comfortable taking the Chiefs at 9.5 right now.
Yeah, I am not. We're disagreeing a lot here, Pete. I like it. I am going to take the Texans here. I think the Chiefs will win. I think it'll be a close game, though. I mean, this is the Watson-Mahomes showdown. When these two teams met before, the Texans won, but Watson did not play very well. It was not a whole month. It was not a big quarterback matchup. It was just a kind of a gutty matchup of the teams. But in this case, I think that Mahomes has been a lot cooler this year, probably in part because of that injury that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
I do think that Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. No disrespect to Lamar at all. Lamar's an incredible athlete. But, you know, if I'm picking a franchise player to cornerstone my team for the next 15 years, it's going to be a guy like Mahomes who has an amazing arm.
Yep.
And who doesn't just rely on, like, his incredible breakaway speed to get out of things when they get dicey, you know? And I mean, Lamar has a good arm as well. He wouldn't be an NFL quarterback if he didn't, but Mahomes from my perception has the best arm in the NFL, bar none. And that's the kind of guy that you want, you know, helming things, because Lamar will slow down as he ages. That's just what happens to us biologically. Mm-hmm. And so the stuff that he's able to pull off now, it's really highlight reel material, but it's not going to last forever. You know, take it from me who watched Michael Vick's prime years, right? And he was an amazing player when he was on the field too.
Yeah.
But so anyway, I really like Mahomes in this matchup. I just don't think that this is going to be a 9.5 point thing. The Chiefs have kind of underwhelmed this year relative to expectations going in. And I think this is playoff football. Anything can happen, but these games are normally pretty close. And these two teams, like man for man, they have a pretty, they line up pretty evenly, I think. And so I think we'll see a closer game than 9.5.
I think what we need to watch for is Deshaun Watson going to take a lot of chances? I mean, he's only thrown 12 picks this year, which is still much lower than the rest of the league. Pat Mahomes has only thrown 5 picks and 26 touchdowns. I mean, that's what we talk about. He's so dynamic. But what you see with a lot of these dynamic players, the no-look passes, the sidearms, is they take so many chances, and they're not reckless with the ball, but they are less consistently smart with the ball than other quarterbacks. And I think that's where Pat Mahomes, in addition to everything you said, has made such a difference. I think that could be a game changer here as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, the last one here, we have Seahawks going to Lambeau. Seahawks, Packers. Packers are favored by 4. I don't know what to make of this line, Pete, because I can't figure out either of these teams. The Seahawks just beat the Eagles, obviously, but a super banged-up Eagles team, and the Seahawks scored 17 points against that team. The Packers lost to the Eagles earlier this season, obviously a much healthier Eagles team. I think it was the third game of the season. And I'm still not convinced, despite the Packers' very good record. I think they're 13-3 on the season. I'm still not convinced they're actually a good team. So I really don't know what to make of this line. I think it's really interesting. But I think, given the home field advantage Lambeau factor, I will take the Packers by 4. What do you think?
I will do the same. So this is the only one we're going to agree on. I was just underwhelmed watching the Seahawks yesterday. I know that they obviously got the win, but like we talked about, their offense was really sputtering. The defense was keeping them in that game. And the Packers have been disrespected this entire season. I mean, you could argue the last 2 or 3 seasons, the Packers have been disrespected. And everyone's talked about they're the worst 13-3 team we've seen in many, many years. And I know these guys are professionals, but at the end of the day, they hear that stuff. That stuff matters. They're going to look to come out and blow the doors off the Seahawks early. And like you and I have talked about so many times, and like we did last week, Russell Wilson doesn't play in a single normal game ever.
No, exactly.
There's going to be some quirks. There's going to be something crazy. There's going to be a broken play that goes for 60 yards. There's going to be some kind of scoop and score or pick six that changes the dynamic. But at the end of the day, I still like the Packers by... I know this one's 4. I was going to say by a field goal, but I'll take -4 too.
Okay, sounds good. So that's what we've got. We've got we're in agreement on the Packers by 4, and then we're in disagreement on all the other lines. So we will see this time next week who was more successful. I will hopefully avoid another 0-4 performance. a genuine third string performance there. All right, Pete, is that all we have? Do you have anything else for third string before we close it out?
What a week. I'm getting excited for our draft previews already after I saw Tua declared today out of Alabama. So we'll have to talk about where he could go, and it'll be a fun next month and a half as we podcast our way to a third Super Bowl for our third string family. And we'll get right to it, and before we know it, we'll be into baseball. So life is good.
Can't wait. Yeah. One good thing about the Eagles losing is that, you know, we're a little bit higher in the draft order. So that's always good. Your Redskins, of course, way up there, so you should get excited for draft night, man. It's going to be a good time. And we already know that Joe Burrow is going to Cincinnati, so you know, you'll have your pick. You get to choose anybody you want apart from Joe Burrow.
If we play our cards right, you and I will be there in person to watch that second pick probably disappoint me.
I'm ready to do it. I do need to talk to you about buying those tickets, so let's sidebar that.
Perfect.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Third String. Thanks for putting up with my croaky voice. I don't know if you could tell, Pete, as we went on, it was kind of getting like deeper and more gravelly.
I thought you were just doing that for effect. Unlike me, he's choking over here on whatever cold I'm fighting off.
Well, yeah, I mean, you were fighting off a cold last week too, and I think you gave it to me through the interwebs.
Because technology in 2020 is something, man.
It really is amazing. Yeah, just spreading pathogens abroad. We got off basically the next day. Like, I came down with something, and it's just been like, it's been a brutal time. I feel pretty good now, but still fighting the effects on the voice. So Anyway, thanks for putting up with me. If we missed anything, or if we didn't, or if you just want to tell us how much you love the show, thirdstring@vernacularpodcast.com. That's 3rdstring@vernacularpodcast.com. Hopefully you've enjoyed the playoff football so far. Watch more, and then let's talk some baseball next week, P. Let's include some baseball stuff in our small ball segments. Can't neglect the greatest sport in the world. All right, for Third String Podcast, I'm Zach. On the other line,
I'm Pete.
Have a great week.